We
are.
We
are.
We are cultivate.
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 We are cultivate.
Hello and welcome to a special mini-sode of Ye Olde Crime, the show where Maddie and I discuss the funny, strange, and obscure crimes of yesteryear every Wednesday. This special bi-weekly segment is called Can You Crack the Cramp Word, which is slang for a difficult or obscure term, which I thought was very fitting. And joining me today is Nikki Woodard from the As the Money Burns podcast. And before we begin, I'd like to give her the opportunity to tell us a little more about herself and her show before we get started. Welcome.
Well, thank you. My name is Nikki Woodard, and so I have a history podcast where I reconstruct the Great Depression through the experiences of actual heirs and heiresses. So I'm telling it kind of like a soap opera from a time when these girls are teenagers, right before their debutante balls when the crash occurred. So I set up the world, and now I'm taking it through their first marriages. And so what sets up the rest of their lives in comparison to other heirs and heiresses around them that they interact. So the primary heiresses are Barbara Hutton, who inherited a third of the Woolworth fortune, Doris Duke, whose family founded Duke University, as well as Lucky Strikes was one of the fortunes in Duke Energy, Huntington Hartford, which is the grocery store change AP. And then two other is and their cousins is Jakey Astor, John Jacob Astor the Sixth, whose father died on the Titanic, and his cousin, Louise Astor Van Alen. And they are those two are both grandchildren and great-grandchildren of Caroline Astor, the society queen of the Gilded Age. And so just what happens to all of them and the people around them who lost their fortunes, who gains fortunes, who like the Ponzi schemes, the scandals, the romances, the seductions, the pursuit after money, the family rivalries, the envy, and just all the psychological stuff. I've always been into history ever since I was in third grade. The first time I heard Pocahontas was the first history story I know of. And then later found out like my mom had gone to England for a quick trip and she brought this Kings and Queens of England book. And I was like, all of a sudden I was like, wait, fairy tales could be real. When I was in junior high and high school, the school system I was in the Houston and Texas public school system, and it goes to private too. But instead of doing science fair, I did something called history fair. And because my dad had a media company, he was using it for real estate. My brother, who was closest to me in age, and I really got into that. So my whole senior high school was making documentaries. I went to University of Texas. I got a history degree and a film degree. I worked in Hollywood for a year, went off to grad school to University of Chicago, got a master's there in Middle Eastern studies with a heavy focus in history, and then came back, worked at History Channel for 3 years, and then kind of spread out to do there. And I've always been interested in media and history. And so I got to this point in life where I had my marriage fail, career was stalled. I'm really all about history and media because that's the way I want to tell it versus writing books. I want a TV show, I want a documentary, whatever. And so I started pursuing these things. I found this gossip column in the New Yorker talking about Newport, Rhode Island. I had done a summer program at Brown when I was in high school. So I was like, oh, let me look at this. And then found out Doris Duke and Barbara Hutton and all these people were there and just started building the story. And then I got like went around for years in Hollywood, not really being able to get anywhere, needed to create intellectual property. And then finally people told me about podcasts and started listening to them. And I was at this weird temp admin job and decided to turn this story I was developing into a podcast. And so that's my insane, crazy background. Oh, and by doing history fair, I did the dullest projects. I did computer graphics the first year of my freshman year. Well, when I was in high, junior high, I did the Salem Witch Trials and I did Aztecs. And then freshman year, I did computer graphics. And then the second year, I did eminent domain. And I was like, never again am I working this hard and not liking my subject. So then I did mental hospitals and fairy tales and have been that crazy person ever since.
That's awesome.
So the good thing is with podcasting, it was like, oh, these are my people. Like people are finally talking about what I want to talk about and, you know, and different segues and ways people think. It was just like it's just cool because you've always been the odd person, you know, you're odd person here for one thing and you're an odd person here in another. And mm-hmm. then you just go like, oh, there are people who have my weird, and they like it. They want this information. Yep. So I set up my podcast is the first part is like a story. So you get into the emotional telling of the story. It's three sections. Second section, I go into the history of like how I might have found stuff or problems mm-hmm. I had. And then the last part is like, let's relate it to today. Because everyone's like, well, why do people care about rich white people? I mean, rich people, and especially rich dead people, rich white people, whatever. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, because the thing is we get to learn everything about them. We know how they died. But what they're dealing with, like, do you get along with your parents, sibling rivalry, like all these problems that everybody has, divorce, betrayal, scandal, and then just see how money elevates that problem.
Yep.
You know, once in a while it solves a problem, but it actually, like, you don't have to worry about starving, but then you have to worry about kidnapping. I covered the Lindbergh case, like as the stories cross over, because in the Lindbergh case, everybody was trying to help out. And one of the people who helped it is a recurring character who owns the Hope Diamond.
Oh.
She gets fleeced out of $100,000 trying to save the baby and actually has to pawn the Hope Diamond for a little while to pay off the loan that she took to try to help recover the Lindbergh baby.
That's nuts.
Yeah.
That's nuts. Oh mm-hmm. my God. That's crazy.
And that's why I tried to tell the story so we get to get familiar with people and get invested in them versus just like, oh, it's just so easy to go, oh, here's the one story. Oh yeah, they were born to die and it's like seven different marriages or three marriages yep. and they're kind of fucked up. Instead you go like, oh, well, you think she has a problem. Well, you should see what this person is going through and this person. It's like you
yep.
don't know who to trust.
Yep.
Especially when your mom wants to kill you for your fortune. I mean, that's kind of bad.
Yeah, exactly. As you mentioned, there's quite a cast of characters that you discuss in the show. Are any of them a particular favorite of yours?
I tried to pick the people that were most important, and so they recur. So it's definitely Doris Duke. She's extremely wealthy. She's odd. She never knew how to, like, assimilate with people. When you start telling a story, everyone's in love with her. It's like, yeah, she is actually the most hated person in the story. We have Barbara Hutton, who is a very sweet and lovely person, a little bit spoiled. I mean, in one way. She wasn't spoiled very much in another. But she becomes the Marie Antoinette of the Great Depression because between Doris and Barbara, they almost have like almost equivalent fortunes is close enough.
Mm-hmm.
But Doris is like almost twice as wealthy. But Barbara Hutton, Doris had her debutante ball in August 1930 when people still thought the Great Depression was going to not be what it is. They thought like, oh, this mm-hmm. is a temporary bump. In December, they know it's not working. So she has her debutante ball. And then the world turns against her and everything she does for the rest of her life, she is just hounded. And the same thing, like John Jacob Astor actually survived the Titanic in his mother's womb. Oh. So he's born 4 months afterwards. And his dad was the richest man to die on the Titanic and how things got screwed up with him being died post because he was like, if someone was born, but not mentioned in the fortune, but his brother inherited like $2 billion today. And Jakey gets like 200 million. The numbers were like 70 million to like 3 million. And so, but their sister is one of the first people to potentially enter King Tut's tomb. And she's like, they're just like all these, like, it's hard to pick just one. That's why I had to keep telling mm-hmm. all of them.
Yep.
And the lady who owns the Hope Diamond is fascinating. Barbara's uncle is E.F. Hutton. He's married to Marjorie Merriweather Post. She built Mar-a-Lago. So you have like all these like ongoing ties past and present and
mm-hmm.
you know, and then just as you're randomly going by and looking at newspapers, I'm seeing other crimes and other activities and other like side stories that people come up with, so you try not to get too distracted.
Yeah.
But I caught those two.
That's awesome.
And they're 20-minute episodes, not super long.
Yeah they're very easily digestible, I guess is a good way to say it. Like I listened to a bunch of them while I was road tripping recently. So mm-hmm. my last question is more kind of like for me than necessarily the podcast listeners. I'm just curious to know what it was like to work for the History Channel.
It was very funny because when I worked there, 9/11 occurred.
Oh.
And so I had already gotten my master's in Middle Eastern Studies. I got that in 99. And so 9/11 is in 2001. So I was in post. So it was cool because you get to see all this endless archival footage. And definitely we were the World War One and Two in Civil War place. So I know all about Civil War reenactors. And then when 9/11 occurred, I had just done the retrospect of the Gulf War from 92. And so it was like very interesting seeing that all happen again. I did get a copy, and it's somewhere buried in my files, the memo where they said, you know, you could start interviewing younger historians and not as like the older ones aren't attractive or whatever. And we're just like certain requests would be like, it was a different time period. It's funny. I just had a 20-year reunion with the people I had worked at that company. And I was definitely the history nerd. And my friends from high school still referred at me as the history fair nerd. I had a technical problem and a friend came to help me with some sound. And she looked at my boyfriend. She goes, "I hate history fair." That was a bane of my existence in high school. That was her main thing. So it was like, it was cool because you know, sometimes you're talking to people. I worked on the Theodore Roosevelt special. I worked on Masada. I got to work on a lot of things that just, unfortunately, it was generally more history based. I mean, U.S. history based. I did do Haunted Chicago and Haunted Maine.
Cool.
But I always wanted to do a little bit more international, and there's just always, and I also like periods where there aren't photos, there's not many paintings, there's not, like, one of the reasons I have to tell this as a podcast is, like, I don't want to do it as a documentary. I don't want to be licensing all this stuff. I want to first concretize the story and then take it and evolve it further. But I would just, I would drown every time, like, you know, okay, yeah, I mentioned the Hope Diamond all the time, but how many photos do you have that aren't just the beauty shot of the Hope Diamond? And you really just want to go into it. You want to go and, like, you know, read in the newspaper the colors of a particular place, the fashions. It's kind of funny because you pick up, like, we're going to be doing this slang thing, and you pick up different slang. And for this episode, I'm just finishing. I ran across one I wanted to use as the title, but I can't. It's called face spanked. So this woman crawled into her dad's house. And he just got remarried, and her stepmom didn't know who she was. And she thinks she's, they say, a man burglar. And so she face spanked her. I slapped.
Sorry.
I know. I had to, like, I worked it into the story anyway. So this episode that's out after we record this, which is probably before this is out, I was like, I have to mention the face spanked one because it's just too, you know, some things are too fun. And I also saw, like, some terms for, like, early female millionaires recently that was just kind of like, you know, it's just kind of funny, like, how they, like, certain things are terms. And then there's most of the terms, like, we kind of know, like, Hepcat and, like, a lot of 1930s. Oh, you're like, oh, it actually went far that far back. Okay.
Yep.
I don't know how, like, in the 1800s, the period you're in, some things translate and some things don't.
Yeah, there are definitely some things where it's like, I would not have gotten there at all based off, like, current context or even with the context that you are able to provide. It's like, no, I don't, wouldn't have gotten there.
Well, and, like, it's a totally, like, even urban living wasn't as much then. So it's going to be more rural in existence, and, like, it's going to be holdover from Europe. And so it's like, it's just so many layers where, like, you know, the words that are coming in the 30s is jazz age, which is still sexy and vibrant for us.
Exactly.
All they want is love. Everyone else wants their fortune. Based on history, we discover the Great Depression through a set of actual heirs and heiresses as they fight off fortune hunters, greedy relatives, envious rivals, and scandals. Would you be able to spot and resist a fake in your midst? How far would you go to gain a fortune? These interweaving stories reconnect the past and reveal new connections. Subjects include the Titanic, King Tut's tomb, American dollar princesses, debutante balls, royal paramours, Ponzi schemes, sweetheart scams, love triangles, bank failures, suicide, and so much more. The historical series As the Money Burns by Nikki Woodard is available at all podcast directories and the website asthemoneyburns.com.
So that is actually a great segue to the slang term portion of the interview. Are you ready?
Yes, I'm a little fearful because I was like, I was going to do a little research and I was like, oh no, I don't think my brain can pull in, and y'all, like, these are going to be such a random amount of context. Like, we'll just have to wing it.
Yep. So I can give you the words in a sentence. So just know that.
I will definitely be requesting those.
Okay. So your first term is malt worm.
Malt worm or malt worm?
Malt worm, like M-A-L-T, and then worm like the creature.
Okay. I don't want to hear it in a sentence first.
Okay. When it comes to social outings, one never wants to be a malt worm.
So first I was thinking maybe like a tequila worm, but that just sounds like someone who would probably be the bad drunk, or like either because they're messy or sloppy and can't do anything, or maybe they're like the angry, crusty drunk because of the malt type of thing.
So yes, malt worm is a drunk. And the earliest known use of the noun malt worm is in the Middle English period of 1150 to 1500, which is pretty cool.
1150?
Yeah.
Wow.
So older forms of the word were malt worms, malt worms. So essentially a drinker of malt liquor, a drunkard, or an inebriate.
Yeah. Well, if you said malt, like malting, like shedding your skins, like that would be a little different, but malt, yeah. Which is kind of funny because everybody had to drink. Everybody was drinking all the time. Like, I don't know when they weren't drunk in the Middle Ages because you couldn't drink water. Like when I studied.
Yeah,
like
exactly.
I remember that part of Middle Ages. So like you have to be pretty bad.
Yeah.
Or like in which area did it come from?
Just said the Middle English period. So I'm assuming just in like general Europe.
Well, just because I used to work one time with these waitresses and they said like they were Irish girls and they were like, oh, we love like Miller Lite and Bud Light. And everyone's like, but you're Irish. Like, you know, and they're like, no, because you get way too drunk. Like you get one or two and you're on your like butt. But like you can drink Miller Lite and just, you know, keep going. And those girls could outdrink everybody we worked with.
You're 1000% right. Like you couldn't drink water. It was undrinkable. Like you would get super sick. So yeah, you had to drink alcohol. So yeah, it would you would have to be drinking for quite some time to be considered a malt.
You have to be someone who really can't handle your liquor.
Yeah, exactly. Your second term is juggins. So J-U-G-G-I-N-S. Juggins.
Okay. And may I have it in a sentence, please?
If I was asked to write a dissertation, whoever read it would certainly think I was a juggins.
Well, since you reference a dissertation, first I would think juggins, I would think like, you know, boobs as they reference them today. But definitely isn't in that context, or would be funny because it means you're an idiot. Your dissertation writes an idiot, which does, that is possible. But I would think if someone asked to read, what was the sentence again? If someone asked to read my dissertation, they would think I'm a juggins.
Yep.
So it kind of is like a know-it-all or kind of stuffy, full of yourself, but with like the academic bent.
You were actually right the first time. It is a Georgian term for a simpleton.
Oh, okay.
So it was first used in 1835 to 45, and they're not quite sure what the etymology is.
What year? 14, you said?
1835 and 45.
Okay.
And it's essentially a British informal phrase for a silly person or a simpleton.
Yeah, like the early version of a jughead.
Yeah.
Which is like, well, it's funny because like I think like Isaac Newton's was considered like his face, his head was like a jug. So it's like the oxymoron of it. I'm full of useless information. Now, if you ask me about sports or music, I screw up. Like, I'm not good at that. But old history type of stuff and like world, like around the world, like that was why I couldn't do a PhD, is because I would always segue into something else within 2 years. It's like, oh, well, like the same thing with the thing is like, oh, let me go down that trail.
Yeah, I understand that completely. That is 100%
yeah, looking at the topics that y'all cover, like you have to have. You have to have fun, and also, like, because to keep doing it, like, you have to, it's not just intellectual curiosity. You got to have something that makes you laugh and smile and just not drown in the other aspects of it.
Yeah, and, like, the horrific nature of some of the things that we discuss, yeah.
You know, always like crime, I'm into psychology as to why someone became that. And I always want to know like the reason why I'm covering the period of time is like, I'm always interested in your pretty much your junior high to your first early adult experiences, because so many people get locked into what you experience. Like, you know, if you weren't popular, but you wanted to be popular, you might spend the rest of your life trying to be it or being negative because you don't like it. Or, you know, like you wanted love from your family, like, especially like working in Hollywood, like I was like, you can always tell who people were in junior high and whether they like themselves or not and like how they're overcompensating. He goes, that's very interesting and true. And he was a major music executive. He had played at at Woodstock. But you're just like, but it works out. And then you just like keep looking and you're like, oh, well, maybe not other people are like that. You're like, no, still keeps going.
Well, I would like to thank Nikki for joining me today for Can You Crack the Cramp Word? And before we go, can you tell our listeners where they can find you on social media and when new episodes of your show come out?
I have new episodes come out every other week. It's a 2-week. Right now, this last year, I've had some technical issues, so I'm a little bit behind. I'm trying to get back to my very original schedule because I try to tell the stories chronologically in the time period. So I'm like 91 years in the past. But February is February in our story so that we have the holidays and we kind of like also just feel the progression of the story. And I just rotate around whosoever major life event happens. And upcoming, I have like the love triangle is exploding and I have a whole bunch of betrayals. So I've set up a lot. And now we're getting to the dark parts. You can find me at, it's As the Money Burns. It is in YouTube. It is all the podcast directories. I have a website. It's As the Money Burn is a Facebook group and Facebook page. Twitter handle, As the Money Burns. I made sure to lock it all down before I release the name. And so I would be very happy to have new listeners. If I can get my stuff a little bit more under control, I'll start some other podcasts in the near future. But this is the primary one that this is a story I have to tell. It's very parallel to things that have happened in my life. Now, I was never rich. Definitely not by comparison. I mean, we had a couple good years, but we also lost it. So I have a different attitude towards money. My biggest thing that happened in my life was a death in the family. And so when I look at people who inherit money, I think of first the person that they lost and then that connection versus it's the lottery and you get all this money. So, but I have other history, like obviously I like history. I like other things. It was just like, when I started this, it's like, okay, this is a story I have to tell. I got about 7 years worth of material to go through. I'm halfway through it. Mm-hmm. You can catch up on the past and I try to make it where you can enjoy the present one, but it's also like great if you hear it as you go along, because then you start to get invested in the characters and start knowing them better versus you hear like when you get a 1 hour or a 10 minute quick story timeline of them, you get 2 minutes. And instead I'm focusing really toughly at 5 to 6 years and all the stuff that's happening and how it would really feel versus just like a 2 sentence and then you run on to the next. And I really like, you know, Ye Olde Crime, y'all are just knocking it out of the park. So like when I see things like Good Pods, they have these lists and Ye Olde Crime is up at the top. And so when I finally see I'm on the chart, I was like, yay, they're there. I'll get closer to you one day, but you're there.
Thank you. Yeah, I love seeing the list because it's good to see who I know who is also rising on the list, because you want everybody else that you know to succeed as well. So it's good to see other people that you know and whose shows that you listen to and whose content that you appreciate also receiving some of the recognition that you want them to receive.
And it's harder too when you're doing something that's different. And so it's like, it's not that I love the other stories. I love biographies. Oh God, I will listen to every biography on Barbara Hutton. I just want to tell it differently. And the same thing, like true crime is such a story, but it's like, you know, you're not covering Scott Peterson again. You're not covering the same people. I actually did work on Menendez Brothers. Like I found their getaway drawing from downtown LA, and they had the getaway vehicle as a silver Porsche in 1992. It was like, what idiot thinks they can escape downtown LA in the hell days in a silver Porsche? I mean, but you know, so it's like there's that stuff, but you know, like you're going back into a different time period and you're, you know, and so many variety of what's happening. So I like, It always like encouraging to me, because it is like when I was doing the History Channel, it's like, we don't want to just cover the same story. Like, let's use it to cover other things. And you can always mm-hmm. use that. But like, you know, 20% of the programming needs to be something else. And then eventually yep. that will build too.
Well, thank you again for coming on the show. It was a pleasure meeting you in person. And yes. on that note, as always, I'm Lindsay, and I'll see you next time with another tale as old as crime.